Welcome back to the Wealth Setting Podcast. This is episode 37. It's October 22nd, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. The Wealth Setting lifestyle is all about helping you find ways to increase your net worth, increase your overall wealth, not for the money, but so that you can have freedom and liberty and pursue the life that you were put on this earth to do. Money may not buy you happiness, but it can buy you freedom, and that's what we discuss in every episode of this podcast. I did want to do a podcast on a special topic, and that's the value of gold. I continually get questions from people about gold. They keep wondering when gold is going to go back up. They're wondering where the inflation is, and particularly for those people that bought gold in 2010 or 2011, they've taken a big loss, and they wonder when it's going to come back. So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode, and let's just jump right into it. Well, unfortunately, I don't have good news for people that are looking on gold to increase. I'm not going to dedicate the time in this podcast to talk about the lack of inflation. I think I've talked about it in other podcasts. I actually don't remember. I talk about these subjects so much. I know I've talked about it in recent presentations that I've given, but I don't remember if there's been a recent podcast episode on it. So I may have to dedicate a podcast specifically to where's the inflation. But for our purposes today, here's the bottom line on inflation. Although the Federal Reserve has printed up $4.5 trillion out of thin air, and that's the value of the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and although since George Bush's last year or so in as president, and then all of Obama's last 6 years as president, we've run anywhere from $500 billion to over $1 trillion deficits, in addition to all that Federal Reserve money printing, and yet there's really no inflation. And that's at least core inflation. We're not seeing inflation in wages. Although we're seeing it, had been seeing it in energy prices, and obviously food has definitely gotten a lot very expensive. They don't count that in the numbers. And again, we won't go into that debate or how arguable that is. But here's the point. The reason we haven't seen hyper runaway inflation, like many people feared, particularly in 2009, 10, and 11, which was one of the key reasons that gold ran up to, I think, almost $1,900 an ounce back in 2011, it was fear and the demand of that fear more than anything that had the price shoot up so astronomically. Well, the reason we're not seeing that hyperinflation, and again, this is just at a very high level. We'll have to maybe dedicate a longer episode to discuss the particulars of it. But the bottom line is, all that money that's been printing, the purpose of it was to put liquidity back into the banks to make them solvent, and the primary means of doing that was making their bad real estate loans good. So by keeping interest rates low, by printing the money to buy government bonds and to buy mortgage-backed securities, the real estate market got reinflated, and subsequently, the bank's balance sheets got better. That was the whole purpose of it. Yes, there have been some carry-on effects. It has caused the stock market to go up, and it's affected international markets, particularly a lot of inflation in emerging markets. But that wasn't the purpose. The whole purpose, in my opinion, was for the Federal Reserve to take care of their member banks, to help them with their balance sheets, to make sure that they were solvent. And the only way they could do that was by getting real estate to be reinflated. So all that money that they've printed has just gone to fill in the hole that was already there. You see, real estate had gotten way out of hand for the last probably 20 years, for sure the last 10 years, but going back probably about the last 20, and overall inflation has really been developing since I'd say the last 50 years, for sure since the early 70s. I think you can even draw it back closer to the 60s. So the reason you're not seeing hyperinflation now is because they're just filling in the hole of all that hyperinflation that you've already lived through the last 30, 40, 50 years. In effect, they're throwing good money after bad. And for a lot of other reasons, that's why we're not seeing an increase in the real wage. Take-home pay is at about a 50-year low right now when you adjust it for inflation. But I'm digressing here. Let's get back to gold. So for those of you that are waiting for gold to go up, I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I think it's more likely that gold will go down. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit of numbers. I'm going to keep this topic at a very high level, but we do have to talk about a few numbers. And I know you may be driving while you're listening to this or not at a place where you can really think through the numbers or write them down. I have written a parallel article, which appears on my firm's website. That's at investablewealth.com. If you look under the news and commentary section, you'll see a recent article there on gold. If you want to look at some of the numbers, and it's not a real elaborate article, it's pretty much just what I'm talking about now, but the hard numbers are written down there. And so if you're having a hard time following along with the numbers now, just go look at that article. They're printed out. You don't have to worry about writing them down for yourself. So I hope you're sitting down, particularly for those of you that maybe purchased a lot of gold in 2011 when it was trading for around $1,900 an ounce. I don't think that we're going to see gold appreciate. It's been hovering around $1,200 for quite a while now. If anything, I think we're going to see gold go down. I think that's more likely than it going up. Now, I don't profess to have a crystal ball. I can't foresee the future. I could be wrong. I'm just giving you my opinion from what I see from a historical basis, looking at the numbers, looking at the correlations, and studying the market. Okay, but this is just an opinion. And my opinion is just as good as anybody else's. I could be totally wrong. There could also be unforeseen events that I'm not taking into my calculations, which could cause gold to definitely spike up, at least for a short-term or near-term trend. You know, that would be war in the Middle East, war with Russia, any type of shocks to the system that cause people to panic and go to safety could obviously cause a spike in gold, and that's not taken into account in my calculations. But just looking at the likely trends, taking what's currently happening in the marketplace now and extrapolating that out, I think, again, gold is more likely to go down than to go up. And in fact, I hope you're sitting down now, but I think gold could get to $900 an ounce. Now, I know some of you probably think I'm crazy, and I'm going to get into the explanation of that in a minute. But before I do that, I want you to think of gold in a different way. And this is, if you're really somebody that's enthusiastic with gold or other precious metals like silver, this may go against your grain, but just at least have a thought experiment with me here, okay? I don't want you to think of gold as a precious metal. I don't want you to think of gold as a safe haven against inflation or crises or anything like that. I don't want you to have any emotional attachment to gold whatsoever. And in fact, I want to make this subject even more relevant for people that don't even care about gold. The point of the matter is that you shouldn't have an emotional attachment not only to gold or precious metals. You shouldn't have an emotional attachment to any investment. In the stock trading industry, we like to say that we never own stocks. We just rent them. Or we never fall in love with a stock. We just date it. And that's what you need to think about with all of your investments. You don't want any emotional ties. Listen, everything goes up and goes down. Everything goes in a cycle. You need to cut your emotional ties with things. So if the day comes when the trend is going down, you can sell that asset. You can't argue with the market. You can't fight the Fed. The market prices things irregardless of how you feel about it or what you think about it. So if you stubbornly persist to think that a particular investment is a good idea, even though the market is telling you you're wrong, you're going to end up losing. Now, again, I'm not talking specifically about gold in this category. I'm just talking broadly in all investment classes. Don't fall in love with your investments. Love your spouse, love your children, love your dog. Don't love your investments. They're just commodities to be traded. And so that's where I want to go back to gold. Don't think of gold or silver as a precious metal. There's really nothing precious about it. Think of gold as a commodity. A commodity is simply an item, a physical item that has some type of perceived or intrinsic value. And that price fluctuates based on supply and demand. Now, as far as gold being a precious metal, you know what? Every commodity is precious when it's in short supply. If you live somewhere in the desert where it doesn't rain, then water is in short supply and water is a precious commodity. If you live somewhere where there's no topsoil, then good, fertile soil is a commodity that's in high demand and in short supply and it's precious. If you live way up in a northern country where it's always cold and you rarely see the sun, then heat and warmth, the sunlight, that's a precious commodity. So any commodity can be precious when you don't have it and when you desire it. That's the supply and demand. So gold and silver, they are just commodities. And at certain times, particularly when there's economic collapse or some type of insecurity or some kind of event that causes people to want to go to a safe haven, or people are concerned that the fiat currency that their government is using is going to become worthless or worth less, then gold and silver become more precious. So gold and silver can become precious commodities, especially in times of fear or uncertainty. But that's not the majority of the times. And for right now, our commodity is based on the U.S. dollar, which you can consider a fiat currency or a debt-based currency. I don't want to go into the particulars as to actually what it is. It doesn't matter for our purposes. The bottom line is that's what drives our economy. That's what our economy is based on. And so 90% of the time, 99% of the time, the need to have gold as a precious metal in our current economy is not necessary. Now, in 2010, 2011, there was panic and the price of gold did spike up significantly. But that fear and panic overshot the intrinsic or the actual market value of what that metal was worth. And that's why in 2013, the price collapsed. And that's why for the last year, 12 months or so, we've pretty much seen gold hovering more or less around $1,200 an ounce with a lot of people waiting on it to keep going back up. And here I am today telling you I think it's more likely to go down than to go up. Okay, so before we get into those numbers, here's what I want you to think about gold. Don't think of it as a precious metal. Think of it as a commodity. And specifically, think of it as real estate. Yeah, real estate like land. Like the land that your home is built on, or that the land that a farmer would grow his crops and vegetables on. And if you think about it, that's what gold is, right? Gold is real estate. Gold is land. Where does gold come from? It's dug from out of the earth. It's mined from out of the earth. So it is literally a mineral or a rock or a piece of ground. Gold is the realest of real estates. It's actually a piece of real estate or a piece of land that you can put in your pocket and carry around with you. That's why for millennia, it's been used as a storage of wealth. Now, gold doesn't rust. It doesn't corrode. It has a lot of, you know, industrial medical uses and things like that. Not as much as silver, and not because it doesn't have purpose. It's just that it's so much more expensive than silver that it's not used as frequently. But it certainly has industrial purposes. But the bottom line is, it's an element that's taken from the ground. It's as much as a piece of real estate as any other piece of the earth. And real estate, particularly if it has the right location or something associated with it, has long-lasting intrinsic value. So gold, like real estate or like other commodities, can protect you in times of inflation. It can preserve your wealth because the intrinsic value rises at least as fast, if not faster, than the decrease of the fiat currency. Gold, just like land, is multi-generational. When you pass away, it's not going to degrade or corrode. It's still going to be there, just like a prime piece of property would be. I'm not going to get into erosion, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I know that happens to land, but for our purposes, we're just talking about a pristine piece of land. That land is going to outlive you and outlive your children and your children's children, right? It's going to be there for centuries, just like the gold is. Again, that's why it's a preservation of value. So when you think about gold, think of it as a precious piece of real estate. They're not making any more gold, just like they're not making any more high-value real estate. If you own beachfront property in Malibu, California, they're not making any more of that. People want to live on the beach in California. So that property maintains its value and increases in value because there's always more demand for it than there is supply, and it'll last multi-generational. So think of gold in terms of that. It's like beachfront property you can put in your pocket. But land prices fluctuate, just like soybean prices, just like gasoline prices, just like cocoa beans or any other commodity. It's based on supply and demand. Like we said, it's just that they're not making more gold. They're not making more land. So that's why they tend to be more stable than something like a cocoa bean or a soybean, because you can have a bumper crop one year and then a drought the next year, and that affects the crops. But there's always about the same amount of gold and gold reserves from year to year, just as there's always about the same amount of beachfront property in California. Okay, now let me go back and explain this price point. One thing that affects the price of land, just like it affects the price of gold, is the energy that's required to develop that land. Because developed land is always more expensive than undeveloped land. Now, while they're not making any more gold, there is gold in the ground that we haven't gotten to yet. This is gold reserves. And when the price is high enough and people want it bad enough, companies and miners go into the earth and they dig it out and they put it on the open market. So just like it takes time and energy to develop land, it takes time and energy and labor to mine and refine gold. And the biggest cost involved with both developing land as well as developing gold is energy. It takes a lot of energy to dig into the earth, to mine the gold, and then to refine it. So energy is the key. Energy is the bottleneck. And in our world, our energy is pretty much derived from petroleum. We're a petroleum-based economy. And so there is a direct relationship and a correlation between the cost of energy and the price of gold. Now, it fluctuates over the years. It's not always analogous. It's not necessarily linear. But more or less, as a general rule of thumb, you can say that there's about a 15 times correlation between the price of a barrel of oil and the cost of gold in ounces. Now, this is where I'm going to talk about some numbers. And like I say, don't need to write them down if you're driving or something. Just look on my firm's website, investablewealth.com. You'll see an article I wrote over there. The numbers are there. But just picture this in your mind's eye and follow along with me. If you accept my premise that the cost of gold is correlated to the price of energy, then maybe it'll make more sense to you why gold has been hovering around $1,200 an ounce for the last year, 18 months or so. It's been fairly stable and has had minimum price spikes in comparison to other commodities, even like commodities like oil. When Russia was invading Crimea, when we had all kinds of problems earlier this year with the Middle East, Oil prices fluctuated, oil prices spiked, but they didn't get near as high as people expected them to. And that's because we've had a resurgence in America's production of oil. And now that it's been proved that we can increase our oil reserves and get oil and natural gas that we couldn't get before, that technology is spreading. It's going to Mexico, it's going to other countries. So our actual known oil reserves in the past few years keep increasing and they're not being depleted. Consumption has been down on a global basis. One, because, I mean, you think of yourself, you're probably using less oil today than you did 10 years ago. Your car is more efficient. If you use it for heating oil, your furnace is more efficient in your home. Industries that use petroleum and oil products, natural gas, they've become more efficient. There's also been a global slowdown. Places like India and China and Brazil, they're using less oil than they had in previous decades. So right now, there's a glut of oil. You know, about 10 years ago, America was producing somewhere, I believe, under 5 million barrels a day. Now we're producing over 9 million barrels a day. We're getting over a million barrels of oil a day out of North Dakota, a place that wasn't known to have, you know, a lot of petroleum reserves. There's a definite oversupply of oil right now. That's why the price has come down significantly. I've talked before about the spread between West Texas Intermediate and the world standard of Brent crude. It's gotten very, very tight. That's because America is producing so much more oil and the developing nations are using so much less. The OPEC nations, which in the past would have cut production, are not doing it now. Some people are saying Saudi Arabia is increasing production so they can put pressure on Russia with different sanctions and things. That may or may not be true. I think more than anything, the OPEC nations desperately need the money. They desperately don't want to lose market share. And so rather than keep prices high and risk losing some market share, they want to get as much of that money into their economy as they can because just like all economies, they're debt-ridden and they squandered their wealth. So I think we're going to continue to see the price of oil decline. Now back to gold. The reason I think that gold has hovered around $1,200 an ounce is that this oil glut is not new. It isn't that it's unknown. The average American may have been unaware of it until recently. They may be unaware that we have an oil glut right now. Maybe they're not seeing enough decrease in the price of their gas at the pump, and so they're really not looking at it or thinking about it. But for at least the last 4 years, the people in the know, people in the energy business, saw that fracking and horizontal drilling was having a major impact. Remember, fracking is nothing new. It was developed around 1948, 1949. So it's about a 60-year-old technology. The real technology there is the horizontal drilling part of it. That allows them to go down like a mile into the earth, and then they can drill horizontally out, and they can go out another mile or two. It's basically robotics, computer-aided drilling. It's amazing. It's phenomenal. That's why they can get this oil that they couldn't get before. There's been a lot of arguments made about the inefficiency of these wells and how they're not cost-effective. Well, I think that's bunk. I think a lot of the environmental groups that were opposed to this drilling and opposed to petroleum, I think they found they were losing the argument about linking fracking to earthquakes and contamination of groundwater, and so they had to look for another avenue to attack it. Well, let me tell you, the numbers I've seen, and it looks like it's bared out true because of all the people that are still involved in drilling, these wells are very efficient. And while it's true that they don't have the life cycle of a traditional well, the cost of drilling has come down significantly. And remember, they don't have to be directly over top of the oil deposit like they had to be in previous days. So the oil platform has a very small footprint. They can not only drill down, but then they drill out. They can drill out a mile or two. You're going to see a lot of these wells, and you're going to see them come out of the shale fields, and you're going to see them go into the conventional fields and reopen old oil wells that we thought that the reserves were not accessible, but they are. And again, that's what's driving down the cost. Now again, people in the know knew this. Smart people that regulate the economy, they knew about these events. They knew the likelihood of it. And they know also what I'm telling you. There's a correlation between the cost of energy and the price of gold. And I think they held off on buying more gold reserves at a higher price because they knew that energy prices were going to come down and that would ultimately bring the price of gold down. It isn't that gold is any less of a hedge against inflation or that it's any less of a safe harbor or any of those kind of things. It's just that they knew, like any commodity, when its input costs go down, the price will go down. So here's the relationship. A barrel of oil is about 15 times the price of an ounce of gold. Now, this isn't written in stone, and it can vary, but it's a good rule of thumb. So about where is the price of oil right now, now that we're in a glut? It's about $80 a barrel. And if you multiply that times 15, you get $1,200. So $80 a barrel oil translates into $1,200 an ounce gold. That's where gold has pretty much hovered for the last, again, say year, 18 months, because people knew, people in the know, the smart people, the people that had their finger on the pulse of the economy, they knew that oil was going to come down at least to $80 a barrel. Once issues in the Middle East are resolved and conflicts with Russia and Ukraine and things like that, you know, that's going to cause spikes in oil more so than it causes spikes in gold, because oil was consumed and gold is not. Therefore, the price of gold is more stable. You don't need gold to get to work, but you need to fill up your gas tank every day to drive to work or to take your kids to school or whatever you do. Energy runs the economy and energy is consumable, so it's going to fluctuate more. So these smart guys with their fingers on the pulse of the economy, they knew that they were going to keep the price of gold stable because they weren't going to pay more for it, because in a year or in 18 months or so, they knew the price was, if it had gone up, it would come back down. It was going to be down around $1,200 an ounce because they knew that oil was headed to $80 a barrel or less. So with the known oil reserves that we know that are there today, unless there's a hiccup in the system, unless there's a war in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe or some unforeseen problem like that, unless something like that occurs, it's very unlikely that in the short or near term that demand or consumption of oil is going to outstrip the given supply that we have. So that's why we can be relatively assured that the price of oil is probably going to come down lower than $80 a barrel. So that $900 an ounce for gold, where does that come from? Well, we know that countries like Saudi Arabia, that are really just sitting still today on a sea of oil, their production cost for a barrel of oil is probably less than $25 a barrel. It costs them virtually nothing to pump that oil out of the ground. Even though their wells are less productive than they used to be and it is harder than it was, it is still very, very cost effective for them to pump the oil out. The reason prices are so high is because of the cartel that OPEC has and because of drilling restrictions and other things like that we've had in the U.S., which have depressed our production of oil. So the Saudis are very happy to pay $25 in cost to bring oil out of the ground and then charge us $100 or $125 a barrel for it. That's how their kingdom has been propped up for all these many years. But even with oil down to $80 a barrel, you don't see them cutting back on production. You don't see them slowing down. They're addicted to the cash flow. They need the money, and even though their profit margins have been cut, they've got plenty of room to cut because, like I say, their costs are somewhere probably less than $25 a barrel. Now, our oil production in the U.S., it's also a lot cheaper than you would think. Even with the fracking and these new technologies, some conservative estimates say that their costs are definitely below $60 a barrel, if not $50 a barrel. In some cases, these highly productive wells, they probably have a cost not so much dissimilar from Saudi Arabia. Remember, we're now producing more oil than Saudi Arabia is. I've seen numbers that say that some oil in this country, in our country, can be produced for under $30 a barrel. And on average, it might be around $50 for the less productive wells. Now, sure, there are some that don't have that cost structure, and they could survive when oil is at $100 or $120 a barrel. And as the price comes down, those wells will shut down. They're inefficient. But the wells that can run productively will, and more money and more capital will go into developing those resources. For our purposes, though, let's just assume that oil can drop down to $60 a barrel. OPEC can surely produce it for that level. And even if you don't think that it's possible that we can get that low in the U.S., even though I'm telling you it is, I know some of you don't believe me, well, for sake of argument, you can at least believe that the Saudis would take the price down to $60 a barrel just to put the Americans out of business. So if we just use that as a premise, if the cost of a barrel of oil stayed at $60 for any length of time, then using our rule of thumb, do you know that what that would do to the price of gold? $60 a barrel oil times $15 takes you to $900 an ounce of gold. Now, I know some of you are skeptical and you don't believe me, but remember, it wasn't that long ago that gold was significantly below $900. The rise in inflation, the devaluation of the dollar, none of those things account for gold being as high as it had gotten in 2011. Remember, gold had a big run-up. It started in about the year 2000, so it had about an 11-year run-up. Gold miners got sloppy. Their production costs got really high. No matter what they pulled out of the ground, they could sell for a lot of money. Well, now they've gone through some lean years. They've taken the cost out of their production as well. And as oil decreases, they will be able to mine and refine gold at a much lower cost. Let me take you back to 1999. Gold hit a decades-old low in 1999. Now, this is before the internet bubble burst. So there wasn't any fear in the economy at that time. There was no safe harbor driving for gold. And energy costs were very inexpensive. So do you remember what gold cost in September of 1999? It was about $256 an ounce. And not coincidentally, the average price for a barrel of oil in 1999 was under $18 a barrel. It was $17.98. See, I'm not kidding when I'm telling you that the Saudis can pump oil and be profitable at under $25 a barrel. We've paid so much for gasoline for so long, we forget really how cheap that commodity is. Just 14, 15 years ago, oil was consistently under $20 a barrel. And in fact, I think it was in 2009 when we headed into the recession that for a brief period of time, oil collapsed. Remember, it went from about $145 a barrel down to about $16 a barrel as recently as 2008. Now, it didn't stay there long, but in 1999, it was consistently under $20 a barrel. And for our purposes, let's take the price of gold in September 1999, $256, divide that by the average price of oil in 1999. That was $17.98. Again, all these numbers are on my website. You know what that equals? 14.24. So we'll round that off to 14. Well, 14 is pretty darn close to that rule of thumb number that I told you about, that 15 times correlation. Now, again, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know any more than anybody else does. But I look at long-term trends, and if the price of oil continues to go down, like it looks like it's going to because of the amount of supply we have and the lack of demand, and it is not only possible that oil could get to $60 a barrel, it is in fact probable that oil could get to $60 a barrel. And if it stays there for any length of time, I think we could see gold at $900 an ounce. Now, that may not be what you want to hear, but I just don't want you to be surprised if that happens. Remember, don't think of gold as being precious. Think of gold as being a commodity. It's real estate that you can put and carry around in your pocket. Don't fall in love with gold. Don't fall in love with any other investment. Now, I want to make something very clear. The point of this podcast was not to tell you that you should not own gold or silver. That's not germane. You may have specific investment objectives where you want to have that type of asset in your portfolio. You may want to have 1%, 5%, 25% of your net worth in gold or silver. And I'm not telling you not to do that. I'm not telling you to do that. That's none of my business, and it's not something that I can assess for you over this podcast without knowing your particular situation. My point of this podcast is to make you aware of the relationship between the cost of oil and the price of gold, and what I feel is the likely probability that continued declines in the cost of oil is going to result in continued declines in the price of gold. That's just something you should be aware of. I'm not telling you to liquidate your holdings. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't have bought it in the past. I'm not telling you that you should buy it or shouldn't buy it in the future. That's not the point of this podcast. Again, I just want to make you aware of the correlation and what I feel is a likelihood that the price of gold will continue to decline. Now, you take that information and you draw your own conclusions. Well, that brings us to the close of another episode of the Wealthsteading Podcast. Again, I'd remind you we have a contest going on. If you'd like to spend an hour or so with me on the phone or on Skype, go ahead and look at the 12 Wealth Building Principles. Tell me which one you think is the least downloaded of those. You can contact me through the website, wealthsteading.com. I'll pick a winner on October 26th, and then we'll make arrangements to have a phone conversation. Also want to remind you, this weekend, October 25th, I'll be in Boise, Idaho. I'll be speaking at the Idaho Liberty Expo. If you're in the vicinity of Boise, get in touch with me. Maybe we can put together a listener meetup. Again, thank you to all of you that have gone out and subscribed or given us a review in Stitcher or iTunes. If you haven't taken the time to subscribe to the show, I'd encourage you to do that. Go out and write us a review too if you can. The more people that know about the podcast, the bigger the community gets, and that allows me to provide you with more and better content. I'd also like to welcome all of our new listeners. Keep sending your questions and your comments to me at wealthsteading.com. In the next episode, we'll be reviewing what's going on with corporate third quarter earnings. This week, we're having about 25% of the S&P 500 report their earnings. So I'll evaluate that data and let you know what's going on, so we can have some kind of idea what direction the stock market might take in upcoming weeks. Until then, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.